You're listening to Leaf Filter Radio, and the guru of gutter protection himself, Chris Cunahan, is here to take your most pressing leaf-related questions.
Hey, everybody, Chris here. I understand we have Ron on the line. Ron, where are you calling from?
Uh-oh. Ron, are you calling from a ladder?
Well, I was. I wanted to ask Chris what I need to do to get my gutters ready to have leaf filter installed.
Oh, Ron, you don't have to do anything. A leaf filter trusted pro will come out and clean out your gutters, realign and seal your gutters, and install leaf filter, America's number one gutter protection system.
So I didn't need to get on this ladder?
Ron, leaf filter trusted pros are in your neighborhood and ready to help. Just visit leaffilter.com/day to schedule your free gutter inspection and get up to 30% off.
Thank goodness. What was that site?
That's leaffilter.com/day for your free gutter inspection today. See representative for warranty details. Promotion is 20% off plus a 10% senior or military discount. One discount per household.
And now, Golf News Network proudly presents The Jay Blade Show. Your host, CyberGolf.com's own Jay Clemmer, and co-starring the galaxy of the golf and sports world's greatest names as his special guest. Yo, 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 this is your main man, DJ Q, telling you to put your hands together for your friend and mine, Jay Clemmer.
All right, thank you, DJ Q. As always, the best producer in the business. He's absolutely right. I'm Jay Flemma, and you're listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network. Jay's Plays is brought to you by JB's Best Hot Sauce. It's the most flavorful. It's the boldest. It's the best hot sauce out there on the market. It's good on hips, lips, and fingertips. It's on every table in the Deep South, and it should be on yours. When it says JB's, it's the best. All right, so thank you to the good folks at Magic Mountain and Jeff Hathaway for coming on our show and giving us the first ski report of the season. All you golfers that have put your clubs away for the winter have something to look forward to for the next few months while we wait for the sun to melt the snow. In the meantime, we're going to wrap up the golf season, too. So we're bringing back one of our very favorite reporters and writers. He is a quintessential sports writer. He's written for Sports Illustrated, and now he writes for Morning Read. Give a warm Jay's Plays welcome back to Gary Van Sickle.
Thanks, Jay. You forgot to mention that I'm president of the Golf Writers Association of America. But you don't
yep,
have
that's
to
true, too.
You don't have to call me Mr. President. That's totally optional.
Are you going to issue any edicts by presidential fiat that we should be aware of?
Well, I'm going to build a wall around the media center, and I'm going to get Mexico to pay for it. But other than that, I don't have any other plans.
I would have thought you should get Wisconsin to pay for it.
No, I like Wisconsin. You know, well, Mexico's going to pay for everything. That's what I've heard.
Well, I tell you what, it's been a really great year, and one of the most interesting things that you've done this year is you did an unusual year-end story when reviewing all of the major championships that happened over the course of 2018. So tell us a little bit about your article and your thoughts on the best majors of the year.
Well, I thought about it, and I don't remember anybody matching, comparing all the majors. So I took the four men's majors, the five women's majors, the five senior men's majors, and yes, this year for the first time we had two senior women's majors. They were new. So that's 16 majors, and I ranked them really subjectively by who had the most exciting finish or dramatic or theater drama participants. You know, if you did a ranking, it wouldn't be the same as mine probably, but you got to throw in a little history and all that. So, I mean, I'll give it to you first. If you got to pick one major, what was the most memorable major of the year for you of all those 16? Keeping in mind that most of us never saw any of the senior majors or the women's senior majors. So, I mean, that's a tough one. People can't even name those majors. But what would you pick as the most compelling major that you saw this year?
Well, the most compelling major that I saw this year – And this will dovetail nicely into our conversation too. I'm going to pick, I wouldn't call it a statistical outlier, but I'm going to go with the sleeper. I thought the most iconic moment this year was when Molinari destroyed everybody like Godzilla raising Tokyo at the Ryder Cup just a few months after winning the de facto world championship at Carnoustie and the British Open. Nobody has ever turned in a more dominant performance in the Ryder Cup. He went 5-0-0. The closest match was 4-2, his singles smearing of Phil Mickelson. He won three more matches, 5-4, and another one, 6-5. Those are astronomical numbers. And so I'm going to give you a double whammy right now and tell you that because of that, he got my vote for Player of the Year. And I'll give you one other sleeper, too. From a golf architecture standpoint, it was nice to see that senior major played at Philly Cricket Club. Welcome back into the fold, that truly great A.W. Tillinghast Classic. How about you? What were your thoughts?
Well, you know, if you're going to talk about golf courses, don't forget the one of the senior women's majors was at the Chicago Golf Club, which is just as iconic, maybe more so than the Cricket Club, and also a lot tougher to get on. Well, you were close. On my list, the Open Championship was number two because, don't forget, Tiger Woods birdied 9 and had the lead in the back 9 starting at 10. So when you factor in the Tiger thing with Molinari, that was a good one. But I thought number one, because it had little of everything, it had drama, it had a lot of birdies, it had Tiger, was the PGA Championship at Belrive. Tiger shoots 64 the last day, and he's hot on Brooks Koepka's tail all the way to the finish. And then Koepka gets up on that par 4 and probably hits the shot, the par three and probably hits the shot of the year, 240-yard par three, and he cuts a 4-iron in there to 6 feet. So that was, you can debate a lot of stuff, but I thought that was one. And, you know, three, you cannot overlook the history factor. I thought the U.S. Open, Koepka winning it back-to-back for the first time in 29 years. And the fact that Curtis Strange, the last man to do that, was the walking TV commentator following that group, and he was there behind the green. And
that was a nice Koepka touch.
Somebody at Fox got, you know, lucky.
Smart. That was a great move.
Yeah, I'll give you, you know, the top five, I'll just give you the top five, and the rest probably people won't care about. But four was the A&A inspiration because he had one of the greatest, he had an 8-hole playoff.
Yes, that was astounding.
And they couldn't finish, and then they couldn't finish Sunday. And you wind up with a winner who's a complete unknown, Pernilla Lindbergh. She hadn't won any tournament in 193 starts. And they had three players in the playoff, which probably nobody remembers who the third one was. It was Jennifer Song. But she wound up, this unknown wind up beating 7-time major champion in B Park. So,
well, call her the Michael Campbell of women's golf.
Yeah. can you imagine if the Masters had an 8-hole playoff?
I would love it.
We'd still be
I would go down in history.
Yeah. Yeah. So, because it's women's, another thing, you know, the problem is, nobody saw it because of the Monday morning finish, you know, and they played 4 holes Sunday night, 4 more. That's why it always bugs me the Masters insist on starting so late, because they're going to have a playoff that goes 5 holes, and they're not going to be able to finish it. So, and 5 was the Masters because we had a little Jordan Spieth, a little Ricky Fowler, and, you know, a lot of Patrick Reed. So, but I thought it was a fun idea to mix and match because nobody really – women's golf – has trouble getting arrested still, even to this day. People don't pay a lot of attention to it. So I thought it might be fun to do that. And senior golf is, I think, the highest-ranked senior open senior tournament I have was the U.S. Senior Open out in Colorado at David Toms won. So, yeah, it's a fun list. It was fun. It's fun to – I thought I'd get a little more response from that. I got some, but, you know, everybody has their own lists and their own ideas. So,
well,
you know,
I think that one of the reasons...
There are no wrong answers.
There are no wrong answers. I think that, you know, A, because the PGA Championship has a bit of an identity crisis to itself and no one else, you know, as sort of being the fourth of four. But I have a more grievous objection to your choice of the PGA Championship at Belrief. And, you know, I want you to reflect upon this, because this is a tough question, and it's got a deep answer to it. But I just cannot support anything that happened at Belrief, because it was done in the shadow, 7 miles away from a burning toxic waste dump that was dangerous condition, you know, just 7 miles from the golf course. And it seems as though the PGA Championship and the PGA of America buried its head in the sand to this issue. For those of you that don't know what I'm talking about, 7 miles away from Belrief Country Club is the Bridgeton Westlake landfill. And that is where, right now, 47,000 tons of leaking atomic waste from the Manhattan Project are stored underground. And the other end of the landfill, years ago, caught fire. And all these years, the fire's been headed directly towards the waste. And if it ever hits the waste, it's going to send an atomic plume miles into the air. I asked the PGA what they knew about this. You know, there were some things that were said orally that were different than the party line. And the party line was, sorry, we don't talk about it because it has nothing to do with the golf. But we came dangerously close to the worst of all fears, because on October 30th, there was a breach in the landfill, and 50-foot-high plumes of flame were towering out of the ground, and all of the denizens grabbed what they call their bug-out bags and were waiting for the word to evacuate. Miraculously, they got the fire under control, but there was a fear that it could have jumped right then and there, arced, the term of art is, to where the toxic waste is. So just a mere 3 months after we get done playing golf there, you know, with many, many years of you know, foreknowledge of this, it just strikes me as one of these days, in the name of the almighty dollar, somebody's going to take a chance and hit the chamber with the bullet in it. And this underscores that, because we came 3 months away from having that happen while people were there. So, you know, and nobody wants to acknowledge it. Nobody wants to admit it. They all bury their heads in the sand about it. But, you know, this is a grievous issue that all sports have to face. Okay, look at the Olympics in Brazil. There were all kinds of problems with water quality, with buildings, and yet we just go on ahead in the name of getting it done, and it's disconcerting. There are real people with real lives that get affected by this sort of thing, and sometimes sports have to take a second, you know, have to take a back seat. You know, do you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, well, I think next year's PGA is probably a bad idea. They shouldn't have moved it to the links at Chernobyl. I think they're just asking for trouble. They're just asking for it now, Jay.
Well, sure, you know, it's funny you should say that. You know, Chernobyl was a terrible disaster, and people don't realize how bad it was. And a lot of people died. A lot of people got sick.
Yep, it's still. I mean, they've already had to fix the dome over the place at least once. You know, what has mankind ever built that lasts more than 100 years?
The Flavian Amphitheater, the Pantheon.
Yeah, if we think we can build something that's going to last the thousands of years that we need to contain atomic waste, we're kidding ourselves. But anyway, the links at Chernobyl, put that in your bucket list.
So, you know, now the other thing that you brought up is that, you know, when you mentioned Molinari and the de facto world championship, the Open Championship, it was, you know, I sort of equated those as two majors, okay? The Ryder Cup and the Open Championship balanced against Kepka's winning the PGA and the U.S. Open. Yes, back to back. That's pretty cool. But I sort of scored that 51-49 in favor of Molinari. And then, you know, so I gave the vote to Molinari, but I just want to let everybody know that I also would have docked a couple of points to Koepka for his dust-ups during the season. I thought it was unseemly that he tried to throw Alan Shipnuck out of the media center interview, the champions interview, and the fight with Dustin Johnson right before the Ryder Cup is also a strike, too. So the final score ended up actually being 53-47, metaphorically, in favor of Molinari. Your thoughts. Am I allowed to ask you publicly who you voted for and why?
Well, I voted for Koepka because you win two majors. I mean, that's player of the year. You don't have to do anything else. And he didn't do a lot else, but the first part of the year he was out with injury, and then, I think that was one of the problems with the Ryder Cup team is Koepka's won the U.S. Open and the PGA, and then you're forced to go play a couple events, and then you're in the Ryder Cup. I mean, he was out of gas. He played terrible. But what a guy does off the course, if you're a jerk, doesn't really affect whether you're player of the year or not, but I'm not sure exactly the details. Something bad happened with, went wrong up on the Alan Chipnick doing a story for Golf Magazine, I believe. And then, he's there. I don't know the details, but you can understand.
Well, do we really need to have the trainer on the cover of the magazine? I mean, really, is that what we've gotten to now? That they get to tell you that the trainer goes on the cover of the magazine or they're not going to do the article. That smacks a little bit too much of telling the writer what to do.
Well, the photo's kind of out of his purview, but
yeah,
I don't know if it was promised or not. If they promised to do it and then went back in the word, that's a little different case, but I don't know what went on behind the scenes.
Take it out on Shipnook? Because Ship does not have the authority. No writer does.
None of these writers know anything about media spin, because if they did, they would know the way to play it is to kill everybody with kindness. They'll look at, guys like Nick Price, and, Nick Price took beta blockers for a couple years there in the 90s. And who wrote about it? Nobody, because Nick Price is a nice guy. He talks to you, he knows your name, he knows your wife, That's the way you can control the media, by being nice to them. You can control the narrative of what they write about you by providing information that they'll find attractive. Tiger's never done that. Phil has never really done that. He's tried a few times. But it's just so easy to do if you think about it, and they all want to have this adversarial relationship because no one in golf ever used to being criticized. You play a bad round, nobody talks to you generally. So they don't understand really anything about journalism or the media. So you understand what they know about is advertising, and they control advertising. Their sponsors control it. So they think they're in charge, and they don't like it when they're not. And it gets, if they're used to getting their own way, and when they don't, they're out of sorts. So I understand why it happened. It was dumb. It was dumb to do that. It's dumb to make an issue up in a press conference. But these guys, Koepka especially, really, he's a relative newcomer. He doesn't have a lot of experience with the media. But, what did Tiger and Vijay Singh learn in 20 years with the media? Really not much.
Well, yeah, the other interesting thing about it, though, is that I do have to disagree with you. I think with all other things equal in choosing between two guys, okay, if one of those guys has antecedents, then yes, you do count them against them. Okay, and a perfect example would be the year that Adam Scott and Tiger Woods came down to the wire as to who was going to be player of the year. I think it was 2012. And ultimately, Adam Scott won by 5 votes. But I guarantee you that in the mind of some of the golf writers, the fact that Tiger had not one, not two, not three, but 4 rules flaps in 1 year was a point against, and should be. If we don't punish bad behavior, people are allowed to do it. We embolden it, and we grant our imprimatur upon it if we look the other way. A journalist in sports is the voice of the great American sports fan, and we can never lose sight of that. And it's up to us to defend good sportsmanship and ethics. Okay, that is the mantle of responsibility when you turn professional as a journalist. And so,
I don't know how you can compare rules violations with being a jerk. talking to somebody. Yeah, those are two different things.
Yeah, but that's why I say that it turned a 51-49 score into 53-47. You know, but it's a pretty serious transgression to throw a reporter out of a championship interview over something that the reporter has no control over. Everyone knows that the only reporter in that room who gets to write his own headlines is pretty much me. And everybody also knows that none of us, including me, gets to decide whether or not we get the cover. That is not our choice. We can ask, we can hope, we can pray, but we can't guarantee it, and we can't certainly deliver it. And everyone knows
again,
that.
Again, we're back to the point, what do they negotiate up front? Maybe they negotiated up front that those guys are both going to be in the cover. And if that's the case, and then they renege, that's a different story. So you should probably get Alan on the phone to find out what really happened there, because, again, it's not like it's a news magazine. It's a feature magazine, and they have people, you know, the covers, it's not like a Sports Illustrated cover. It's a golf magazine. It's a monthly. And they, you know, they all but pay guys, you know, they pay some players to be on their instruction staff and that kind of thing. So, it's a little different kettle of fish. I think without knowing all the details, I don't like it. It's foolish to try to kick a guy out of a press conference because he has the right to be there. Brooks Koepka doesn't know any better about that, but I'm not going to say he's not wrong to be upset about what happened, because I don't know exactly what happened. If he was promised the trainer to be in the cover, and they change your mind, then I would understand why he's ticked off.
But he shouldn't be ticked off at Shipnook and throw Shipnook out as retaliation. Okay, Shipnook was very clear in his articles that he asked for it, but also made it clear that it's not his call. So,
oh, yeah.
But and that's why, like I said,
as a newspaper guy for many years, you got all these. The headline, or even in magazines when I was a golf world, that's why the headline a lot of times gets you in trouble and you didn't write it and doesn't say what was in your story, or the editor changes something to make it sound offensive, or, you know, the photos. How come you took a photo of this guy and not this other guy? I mean, yeah, the other departments of the newspaper or the magazine got you, the photographers and the editors got you in a lot more trouble than you ever got in. So but you know, how would Brooks Koepka know that? He's probably never read a newspaper. He doesn't know anything. You know, who was the guy, Doug Ferguson was talking to, you know, the Associated Press writer who'd been covering golf for about 20 years. He's kind of the king of the golf writers because more people probably read him than anyone. I forget who he was talking to, some one of these new young guys who was a star, maybe Jonas Blix or somebody like that. And he looks down at Doug's, his PGA Tour, media credential. And it says Associated Press, and he looks at it, and he asks Doug, "What is Associated Press? What is that, a blog?"
Oh, my God.
Because, as I said before, guys under 30, a lot of them have never picked up a newspaper. So you have to realize these guys are pampered athletes and maybe not the most well-educated, and stuff happens. But if they had their agents, who should be more media savvy, but their agents are only interested in making deals to make them money with manufacturers. Mm-hmm. They don't understand that they should be fostering relationships with the media to prevent incidents like this from happening.
Well, we're beneath them because we're not as rich as them. We don't live the same lifestyle that they do. They fly around on private jets. We fly coach. They stay at Rocco's place in Sardinia, okay, we stay in the local Motel 6 or the Magic Carpet Inn. You know, it used to be in the old days that the athletes and the writers hung out together. You would see them at night after the round in the hotel. But anyway, so this is a perfect segue. It's time for the trivia question to win a bottle of JB's Best Hot Sauce. Remind me, have you ever won this contest yet?
I don't recall being asked the trivia question before, but maybe I probably
not. The answer is, yeah, you do. You get one every time. You probably want to forget it after missing it. But here we go again. But this one is, your category is golf writers. So you got a chance of getting this one right. Here we go. Which golf writer saw the first no-hitter ever pitched in San Francisco Giants history?
Oh,
Which golf writer?
Well, it couldn't have been the one. It couldn't have been the. It couldn't have been the 2010 year when Graham McDowell won because what's his name pitched a 10-0 no hitter that night and a bunch of guys were at that. So it has to be older. I'm going to go with who would be in San Francisco years ago other than Art Spander.
Well, that is a great logical guess. Okay, but the correct answer is actually Sal Johnson. And here's what happened. You will recall in 2012 the first no-hitter in San Francisco Giants history. First pitcher to pitch a no-hitter for the Giants. It was Matt Cain who did it.
Matt Cain.
Yes.
Steve Ehrlich was at that game.
Okay, well, if he was at that game, I'd be surprised, and I'll tell you why. Because that was the day.
That game because he left in like the seventh inning because it was running late.
Well, Sal Johnson saw the whole thing. And the story is this. You'll recall that that was when we were all in town for the 2012 U.S. Open at Olympic Club. But that was also the day that Art Spander threw his party. Okay, he invited all the golf writers after the round to his house. And so all the golf writers except Sal Johnson and I and maybe, I guess, Steve Elling, okay, you guys were all at Art's house. The only one that wasn't there was Sal Johnson, okay, and me. I was taking a jog around the ballpark, okay, around the second or third inning I get there, and my phone goes off and it's Sal. And he said, you know, this is when I wrote for Golf Observer. He says, yeah, I'm actually in the building. And I said, well, if you're here, there's $5 tickets. Why don't I buy one and come hang out with you? He goes, Jay, I would do that, but I'm working a deal with, I forget the guy's name, to merge Golf Observer and Golf Stats. So if it were any other time, I'd say yes, but I'm closing a deal while I'm talking here. And I said, oh, all right. And so I continued on my run, and I went back to where I was staying. Phenomenal place, okay? Tall ceilings, 30-foot high. It's one of those industrial new places, really out of this world. And the phone goes off again. He goes, Jay, I'm really, really, really sorry. I wish I'd have told you to come in. The Giants are about to pitch their first no-hitter in history. And I looked at him and I said, are you kidding me? I can't believe you did this to me. Mind you, I've been ringside for a lot of history, but still, that would have been fun. As a baseball fan lifelong, it would have been fun to see. But
well, it was a long game and it ran late. And I know Elling didn't go by himself. He bet with a couple other guys, so. I think I don't think you can say he was the only golf writer there because I know Elling was with at least one other guy. But anyways,
we'll have to find out from Steve who he might have been with.
Yeah, but I know everybody gave him grief because he left before the game ended. It was like a 10-0 game, and it dragged on even though it was a no hitter. Usually no hitters pretty fast. But
why would he leave if there was a no hitter going on though? I mean, did he have deadline or something?
No, because he was tired and was like, you know, midnight or something. I mean, it was a late game.
No. That's not correct.
He was on East Coast time.
That is not correct. That ball game ended about 7 o'clock. It started at 4 p.m. local time because I was running at 5 p.m. and it was the fourth inning when I got a hold of Sal.
Oh, really? I thought it was a night game.
Was not a night game, okay? It was about 7 o'clock with the sun still up and me writing that Sal called me back and said, Jay, I'm really sorry. I even asked him, I said, do I have time to run back down there? It's only a couple miles away. He goes, Jay, it's the bottom of the ninth. I wish I'd have called you earlier.
Yeah.
I do too, damn it, you know, but $5 tickets to a no-hitter.
The twilight glare with the sun in the bleachers, no wonder he pitched a no-hitter.
So anyway, you know, let's wrap this all up with a little of your thoughts on that Tiger film money grab, you know, silly season nonsense.
Well, I thought it was really irrelevant. It's TV entertainment, and I know I've written it many times, and I'm sure I've said it to you many times. It's a shame that all golf tournaments, even the majors, they're not golf tournaments anymore. They're television shows. And
yep.
This one is, you know, was an exhibition match. It's the ultimate TV show. I wrote a story just the other day on Morning Read on the how important the most significant event of the year, and I picked that event because gambling is going to become a big deal. Two senators, Cryan Chuck Schumer and Orrin Hatch, authored legislation that Wednesday to kind of organize and take control of sports gambling in America, which you know what that means. They want to tax it because I talked to Andy Levinson of the PGA Tour, who says the estimate is that sports gambling is going to total possibly $150 billion a year. And so the government's looking at this going, well, how can we get a piece of that? The PGA Tour is looking at this going, how can we get a piece of that? So it's going to be pretty engaging. This was the first rudimentary step, this match. I think they did have some online betting. The big thing in gambling now is called in-play betting. So you're betting on something during the game while it's happening. I mean, this probably hasn't happened yet, but I'll make up a case where, you know, it's third down and nine, the Steelers-Ravens, and all of a sudden, you know, for 20 seconds you can get odds on that, whether they're going to make the first down, and you can place bets as the game goes on.
This is nothing new. They've been doing this for decades, okay? Guys stand there in the stands. Okay, who wants run or pass? Absolutely during the game. I have seen them there. Read Titanic Thompson.
You can't do it from home on your mobile device.
Okay, that's the difference. Okay.
Yeah, well, that's the difference because 70% of the UK gambling is now done from their mobile devices. That's going to come to the U.S., and you're going to be able to bet on all kinds of stuff live, and it's going to change the way people watch golf and consume golf, and it's going to be a big deal. But yeah, as a TV show, it was instead of the match, I call it the flop. I mean, there was just
the flop.
lousy golf. You know, they thought these two guys were going to have trash talking and stuff. Did you ever watch them? Did you ever watch the Skins game when they were in it? They didn't do squat. They were terrible. So they're not entertainers. They're golfers. And so the whole idea was bad. They're irrelevant. The match was irrelevant. And the whole idea was bad. It was just a pure money grab. And their delivery system broke down. They wound up giving it away to free to half the people. And the people who did pay got mad. A lot of them asked for and got refunds. So it was a disaster from start to finish, but it does point to the way that
That's what happens when you let the money talk. Okay, that's what happens when you let the money talk. I am an entertainment lawyer, and let me tell you what I tell the money. Oh, you're the money? Then you may remain so long as you remain silent. Pay attention. We will show you how genius creates a legend. Okay? Never let the money tell you what to do. It always stinks. Okay? This should have been played at Pine Valley. That's where it should have been played. And this was all just a boondoggle for gambling. Bad idea. Okay, what is best for television is very often not what's best for golf. Yep.
Well, it was, in addition, you know, were they in Vegas? They weren't that far from California, where all the devastating fires were still underway. I mean, so tone deaf to be playing it not only that close, and none of that money's going to the California. I mean, it just seemed out of place when it's next door to these destructive fires.
Okay, well, then you got to say exactly the same thing about the PGA Championship. It's tone deaf to be holding that 7 miles from where people are facing life and death, frightening horrors of toxic waste, killing them with strange cancers and seeping into the ground, air, and water. It's the same thing, only worse because this involves people's lives, not just gambling. But anyway,
yeah,
happier thing.
I think it added a nice element of danger to the PGA. I liked it.
I need something to jazz it up, I guess, but that's not that. All right, so last question. What's on tap for you in 2019, and where can our readers read you?
Well, I write for morningread.com, which is a daily email magazine sent out Mondays through Fridays, and at the majors it's every day. Where am I going to go? Next year, first thing I'm going to is the PGA Merchandise Show in Orlando in January.
Oh, no.
I've been going there for I hate to say how long, and we have a weekly equipment feature, and I probably did 30 of them this last year. So I play a lot of golf. I know a little bit about equipment, and people like reading this stuff. They're always looking for something.
Yes, they do.
Yep. There's some nutty stuff out there, but it's a big deal. And then I'm going right from there to the Phoenix Open because it's I just like Phoenix, and that tournament's kind of wild. And I'll do a couple of tournaments in Florida, like regrettably Bay Hill and the Players, and I like going to Valspar in Innisbrook. I've been taking Honda off my list because the I don't want to get into, but you know, the way it's set up for the media is not very good down there. So I'm just like, you know, I'm not going to every tournament. So I'm going to cut out the ones I don't like. So Honda. They get a good field, but it's just not run very well for the media.
Well, I'll be seeing you in Georgia in April, and then in New York City in May, and then at Pebble Beach in June. With next year's first year, we're going to have the PGA Championship in May.
That's going to be exciting. It's going to because it's going to be so different. And gosh, I hope the weather's foul just to add a different element to the PGA. It'd be fun. Cold for once. I hope the trees are bare. They don't have leaves yet. I hope we get a little snow squall. I think that'd be great.
The last few times we've been there, the place has turned into a mud bath.
Yeah, it was horrible. Honestly, it was so wet, I didn't even walk the course that much either those weeks because, you know, it was just impossible. You ruin your shoes, you slip and fall down. I mean, yeah, they've had really bad luck with weather. I would love to see that place hard and fast and firm. So we'll see, but it probably isn't going to be like that in May, but that's all right.
Hi, everybody. You're listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network. Thank you to Gary Van Sickle of Morning Read and formerly Sports Illustrated and Golf Magazine. We will be back with the next segment of the show after this.
That bump music means we're going to have to take a short break. Don't go away. We'll be back in the second half of the show in just a minute. This is your main man, DJ Q, and you're listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network.
All right. Thank you, DJ Q, for bringing us back to the show in style. He is absolutely right. I am Jay Flama, and you're listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network. Jay's Plays is brought to you by JB's Best Hot Sauce. It's the best, the freshest, the spiciest, the boldest hot sauce out there on the market. It's good on hips, lips, and fingertips. You can find it on every table in the Deep South, and it should be on yours when it says JB's. It's the best. All right, so welcome back to our end-of-the-year extravaganza spectacular, and we've got a surprise for you, everybody. He's been a friend for 25 years. He's one of the true greats when it comes to radio sports broadcasting, and he's the voice of the great American sportsman, Hominus Sporticus Americanus in the Latin lexicon. He puts the extra in extravaganza. Please give a warm Jay's Plays welcome to your friend and mine, Steve Zavin. Steve, welcome to the show.
Jay, this is such an honor. I feel like I've wandered onto the old Merv Griffin set in Seinfeld where Kramer is doing a show. What show is this? Who's listening to this? I defy anybody who listens to this to email me at zabe@yahoo.com. I don't think I'll get a single email. This is just going into your hard drive, right?
Oh, no. Happily, Golf News Net reaches in peak season 450,000 listeners per month, which isn't too bad. And we rotate in and out on Sirius XM. And so that's how everybody can tune into the show. Hey, tell us how everybody can tune into what you're doing right now.
Well, I'm on Team 980 in Washington, D.C., good old AM radio. It is the future. It's going to make a comeback one of these days. Static comes free with the signal, 4 to 7 p.m. weekdays. Also, I will be starting a new show in Milwaukee in May. I can't talk about it right now, but that's going to be fun and exciting. And I do my Zabecast 5 days a week. It's available wherever your podcasts are delivered. Search for Zabecast. Or just go to Zabe.com, Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo.com.
Excellent. All right. Well, two of the sports that you have always been very long in on your radio show and online are football and golf, and that's what we are talking a lot about right now. So why don't we start with, give us your year in review for 2018 for the PGA Tour, the European Tour, the majors, and anything else you thought that was significant.
Well, that's pretty broad, Jay. Do I have to go through every tournament from the Career Builder Challenge to the St. Jude FedEx Open?
Well, you know, why don't you hit the highlights?
Well, I'm driving right now. I'm driving. I did no prep work for this. I thought I was going to answer questions, not review the entire tour schedule. I think the bottom line for this year on the tour is the return of Tiger. It culminated at East Lake with him winning the tour championship. It's a story that you would have believed, and I certainly was in the not going to happen category. It's amazing, and I hope it's real. That's all I can say.
All right, so first of all, tell us, why didn't you think it was real, and when did you think he was done?
Well, I mean, he's been done for several years now, where he has tried to make comeback after comeback on that bad back. And the only reason that I say I hope it's real is that I believe Tiger has evolved into Tiger 2.0, or maybe 2.5, maybe a half version update. He's not Tiger 1.0, who was a dominating, phenomenal golfer and just a terrible human being who treated those around him as disposable, whether it was his caddy or his swing coach or Perkins waitresses. He then went through the scandal. He kind of pretended to be better, you know, after the first blue curtain press conference in the bowels of Tim Fincham's god-awful clubhouse in St. Augustine. And I don't think that really took hold too much. But then, Jay, I think Tiger 3.0 is a genuine person. And so I want to be happy for him. That said, I once knew a cyclist, Jay, who had cancer, and it nearly killed him. But he came back from cancer, and why, my goodness, he was the most dominant cycler the planet had ever seen. And people said in wonder, how is this possible? Wow, this is amazing. And he parlayed that into an inspirational story that he happily peddled with yellow rubber band bracelets and everybody behind him in the media pushing. Turned out to be a fairy tale. The whole notion of, well, the cancer made him stronger. Yeah, that's it. I don't know what's going on with Tiger. I'm glad he's healthy. I hope it's real.
How many more majors do you see Tiger winning?
One, a Masters. I said that even before this comeback to win the tour championship. I said, at some point, Tiger is going to get healthy enough. And at Augusta, you can win in your mid-40s. It's not a problem. It's about knowing all the funky angles, knowing where not to be, putting, experience, nerve, everything else. Plus, it's the shortest field you'll ever get. It's the shortest field of any pro tournament that is considered part of the U.S. circuit, except for a limited field, you know, World Golf Tour event. So it's the easiest tournament to win, and it favors experience and experience the most. So I thought, and also Tiger can hit it all over there at Augusta, even though they've got a little bit of rough now and some secondary, you know, some additional trees and pinched in. You can get away with his misses there. So I think there'll be one more. I think there'll be a mid-40s Jack Nicklaus-like Masters for Tiger, and I think it's going to be something special.
You know, you're absolutely right for another reason, too. Of all the places, Tiger plays exceptionally well at Augusta, time in and time out, even in the worst of circumstances, okay? He finished, what, tied for sixth in 2010? You know, just a couple of months removed from a 9-iron in the face?
Yeah. No, he did. I remember that well, and I'll never forget from that return to golf, A, the absolute repudiation that Billy Payne gave him upon his return, saying he will not be judged by the quality of his golf, but he'll be judged by the character he displays, or something to that effect. And it was,
yes,
it was a stunning, stunning rebuke and a very cold welcome back from the chairman. And I'll never forget Tiger's absolute seething rage that he didn't quite have enough to win. And when he was interviewed by Bill McAtee after his final round, he showed not a single hint of appreciation of, you know what, it's just great to be golfing again, to be out here, such a beautiful place, such a great game, to have my peers welcome me back, to have the fans applaud me. I didn't quite have it this time, but all in all, not bad. No, he was seething. He was so mad, and he was curt. And I remember Bill McAtee saying something to the effect of, so what do you do now? And he said, I'm going to go get a sandwich. I'm hungry. And it was just the most tone-deaf response. I had a hard time with that, because now he finally is in that mode of, hey, I'm just glad to be playing. I appreciate the fact that I'm healthy and I don't have to wake up in absolute pain getting out of bed. That was what I wanted from Tiger Woods the first time around, but he wasn't there yet mentally. He was still in that mode of, I was done wrong by the media. I was done wrong by these Perkins waitresses. I was done wrong by the National Enquirer. And he carried that rage, and I think it didn't help him on the golf course.
Well, remember, things were still coming out pretty much almost on, at that time, I would say a weekly basis. Back then, I was on daily Tiger duty. And
yeah,
so anytime anything happened.
Set, you could probably name 10 deep. By name,
oh, no. I could probably go 18 deep. I wrote an article. Well, hey, I right, well, let's start with the Perkins waitress, okay? Well, you know what, actually, we're wasting time on this. This is a discussion that we really ought to have off the air at halftime. We'll come back to this. Let's do this instead. Let's talk about last year's major championships, because there were a couple of oddities, people that we did not expect to win. You know, two new faces in the major championship winner's circle. You got Patrick Reed, who comes with his own set of antecedents. And then you have Francesco Molinari, who got my GWAA Player of the Year vote.
Okay. Good choice there. Tremendous.
Thank you.
Patrick Reed put on a hell of a display at Augusta. And it was unfortunately marred less than hours after it was over by the sort of bringing up of, hey, where's your mom and dad? Or maybe where is your mother and father? No, it was his own mom and dad who was not there, I believe. Because
that's right. His mother and father are estranged.
Right. And it just sort of dampened things because, you know, this is the greatest moment of his career. And what we don't know, and nobody knows, is what goes on sometimes in family dynamics. And there are estranged families and fathers and sons and husbands and wives and aunts and uncles and everything else all over the place. But you don't hear about it until it comes to something like this. So I was a little bit sympathetic towards him in that regard, but incredible display for him to win the Masters. The U.S.
Okay, but what about his behavior? What about his behavior at the Ryder Cup, though? And after the Ryder
Cup. He was a douche, just like every one of the Americans. The entire team, for the most part, except for Finau, and I'm trying to think who else played decent, but and Justin Thomas. That's it. I mean, those are the only two guys that actually didn't disgrace themselves. One guy, Thomas, went to go see that place before the actual event.
And meanwhile, the entire European team was playing their time and again, including a regular European tour stop.
Yeah. And then I had to hear about the, you know, the Americans kept referring to, oh, my God, it was so tight and the rough was so penal. And I'm like, I don't want to hear about it. Are you telling me that Europeans are genetically advantaged when it comes to hitting the ball straight? Hit the damn fairway, or maybe take less club. It absolutely, the way the Europeans set up that course, played right into the stereotype of the brain-dead American bomber golfer. And I hate that. So Finau and Thomas, they were the studs. Everyone else was a dud, led by Kingfish Phil, the biggest fish of them all.
But then we also got to see one of the most dominant performances in Ryder Cup history, and this is why I voted for Molinari. He was the de facto world champion when he won the Open Championship at Carnoustie. But his performance at the Ryder Cup, a 6-5 win, 3-5-4 wins, and a 4-2 drubbing of Phil the Fish. Dominant performance.
Yeah. Molinari.
Go ahead.
I love Molinari, and it's what is so great about our game, Jay. It's that a guy who's 5'0", 100-0, comes from no pedigree, can whoop every player on the planet on the biggest stage. I love it.
So who would get your vote for player of the year?
Molinari.
I'm glad to hear that. See, great minds think alike.
And I would give it to him, if for no other reason than to piss off Brooks Koepka. Because I really enjoy the fact that now Captain Dullard is getting all snippy that he doesn't get the attention he thinks he has earned so far. Oh, that is rich. I seem to recall this guy saying in an interview with one of the golf magazines, yeah, I like golf, but I'm not like a golf nut. And I just thought, okay, dude, go back to lifting weights and act like you're not really into golf. That's good for the game right there. That really helps grow the game. I like golf. I'm not a golf nut.
Well, exactly what kind of nut is he?
I mean, incredible player. And I mean, I love the fitness. Don't get me wrong. I think it's great for the sport when the best players look like athletes, and Brooks Koepka absolutely does. He clearly loves the game enough to put in the hours to be this good at it. But at the same time, if he wants more coverage, if he wants better coverage, he's going to have to rent a personality or get a coach, because he is an absolute excitement killer the moment he opens his mouth.
Yeah, he definitely, you need a shoehorn to get a good quote out of him, especially if your name is Alan Shipnor.
A shoehorn and a sledgehammer.
A hammer and a chisel, too. All right, now, tell us who you're going to be keeping an eye on that we might think of as a sleeper pick for next year, okay? Have you got a Smiley, Kaufman, or a Jonas Blixt, you know, bandying about in your head that you think is going to have a breakout year next year? Who do you got your eye on that we otherwise might not ordinarily be looking at?
Joaquin Niemann. That kid is going to be special. And he's part of a group of young guys who are going to be special, including my other guy who's not at all under the radar now, but Cameron freaking Champ. I am all about Cameron Champ.
All right, tell us why.
Because he mushes it. He is the longest elite player on the planet. And I mean, when I'm talking about longest elite player, I'm not talking about the freakazoid gorillas that are on Golf Channel in Mesquite with 53-inch drivers. And Cameron Champ is just a lean, mean, average-size, 6-foot-tall, 175-pound poetry in motion, positional perfection player. I love it.
All right, it's time for the JB's Best Trivia Question. All right, Zabe, here's your chance to win a bottle of really awesome hot sauce made by a golf writer, John Burwa, formerly of the PGA of America, and now the purveyor of hot sauce. It's really out of this world. It tastes like wing sauce in a bottle. All right, so I'm going to ask you the question, and I'm going to repeat the question for you. Your category is famous sports writers.
Dan Jenkins.
Hang on, let me ask the question first. Hang on, here we go. Are you ready? This writer for the San Francisco Examiner, San Francisco Chronicle and Oakland Examiner accidentally walked off with the Atlanta Falcons offensive game plan at the Super Bowl when he picked up the wrong backpack. I'll ask it again. This famous sports writer with the Oakland Tribune and the San Francisco Chronicle accidentally walked off with the Atlanta Falcons offensive game plan for the Super Bowl when he picked up the wrong backpack. Who is he?
Is it Ray Ratto?
I couldn't even pick out Ray Ratto from a lineup of Dizzy Gillespie's band. Who's Ray Ratto?
Well, he's only the most famous columnist in the Bay Area, but okay, let me try this again. Was it Tim Kawakami?
No. Looking for Art Spander.
Oh, I've heard of Art Spander.
Yes, well, Cactus, as we like to call him.
Okay. Now,
I'm sorry, do you remember that story, though, by any chance?
No.
Do you remember? Okay, well, they were all doing their interviews. They were interviewing one after the other after the other, and he put down his bag next to the offensive coordinator for the Falcons, went for the interview, and picked up the wrong bag and kind of walked, like, I don't know, maybe 150 yards to a different interview. And he puts the bag down again, and he's interviewing somebody when his cell phone goes off, and they say, come back right now. And he's like, why? What's going on? And he looks in the bag. And he had one of the most famous lines. He goes, it's not like I would have been able to figure out what the hell was in there. You guys can't even explain it to us.
Wow. Good.
But, super guy. Anyway, all right, well, we'll have to send you up a bottle at some point anyway, because it really is good stuff, and I know you like hot sauce, and I know you like chicken.
I got to tell you, Jay, I thought I was going to get the hot sauce just for appearing on the show.
Well, like I said, okay, when we get together...
That's a hard question for a bottle of hot sauce. Man.
You should have seen some of the questions they had me ask, okay? There were some nutty ones, okay? Like, they had to ask somebody...
lost down to their last six bottles, and that's
why... Oh, no,
that's so hard?
No, we just want people to use their noodles, okay? Now, here's somebody that did not use their noodles.
You can't
somebody
use
that
your noodle on a sports writer hardly anyone has heard of.
Well, speaking of not using their noodle, somebody that both you and I know was obviously not using their noodle, and that's golf architect Keith Foster, who it was announced last week is going to be facing potentially as much as 5 years in jail for the importation of endangered species goods. You play golf at Riverbend and maybe some other places that Keith Foster has designed, and he's a big name. He's done Philly Cricket Club, and he was working on Congressional. What can you tell us about this story and about his place in Middleburg?
Well, it's crazy. I live, less than 10 miles from Middleburg, and it is a very cozy, very quaint, very rich little horsey outpost of the greater Washington, D.C. exurbs, some 60 miles out of downtown D.C. There is an insane amount of money in estates in and around Middleburg and beyond in that part of the western reaches of the D.C. market. So Keith Foster, who I heard about first after Riverbend Golf Club got redesigned by Keith, and that was the golf course of my high school playing days. So I knew the golf course very well. I thought it was a fantastic golf course then. And it was just, it was sort of like, when Amy Adams is in a movie and she plays sort of like the nerdy, bookish type. And then she takes her glasses off and puts some makeup on, high heels and a dress. And you're like, oh my God, she's a knockout. that's what Keith Foster did to Riverbend. And yes. It was all very subtle. It didn't require a lot of dirt moving. It was just a great touch. So I was talking to John Madden, who happens to be the pro out there, and our friend Tom Lipscomb, who used to be the superintendent out there. And mm-hmm. I said, man, what's this guy Keith Foster like? Because he did a hell of a job here. By the way, hold on 2 seconds, okay? I'm checking in. Oh, yeah, Steve Zabin for Redskin Showtime. Steve Zabin. Thank you. Redskin Showtime.
You want to order some Chinese while we're at it?
We've had
that before. John Sanford did order Chinese on the show. Anyway, so you were asking the boys.
Luckily, you can edit this out. So I said, yeah, so what is this Keith Foster guy like? And they said, well, he's kind of eccentric. You know, he's a big Civil War buff, and he's got this shop down in Middleburg, and he does this, and he does that. And he also just happens to be really good at golf course restorations. And I just thought that was such a neat story because there are so many big-time architects with big-time firms that would love to get these jobs to do facelifts and cosmetic surgery on some of the greatest courses in the world. And here's this guy 10 miles down the road from me who's a Civil War buff who's getting these gigs because he's just that good. So when I read the story about him and the exotic imports, I shook my head and I just put my head in my hands thinking, why on earth would you risk everything for alligator skulls and ostrich skins and all kinds of weird stuff? It's mind-boggling.
Barn owls. Cheetah barn rugs.
Yes. It's like, come on. Now, legally, he's facing up to 5 years. I have a hard time thinking he's going to get any more than a year.
A year and a day to make it a felony is my guess. I hope it doesn't happen.
Well,
I am not making a prediction. I'm not making a prediction. I just, you know, that's what prosecutors will do if they want to hit him with the felony. They made him plead to a felony. You know, again, I am not a criminal lawyer. I'm a contracts lawyer. Now, what I can say about it is this, that Keith has always been very good to me in terms of the relationship between architect and writer. He's given me a lot of excellent interviews. I've liked his work very much, especially at Philly Cricket Club. But I also have to say, and I wish him well. I hope he gets better. And I hope that, you know, things work out in the future.
Well,
but at the same time,
better.
Well, you know, it was a metaphor thing. What I meant to say is that the one disappointment in this is that the first duty of a golf course architect is to protect and preserve. And that was not it. That was not it, as Russell Crowe would say. No, protect and preserve the environment. And I think that extends, you have to be able to extend that. Remember, you know, you want to protect and preserve the water, the land, the earth. It's a living thing, and, you know, Pete Dye's greatest gift, he said, was the fact that he could take a piece of property and make the water 3 or 4 times cleaner than nature could ever make it.
Yeah. So. Yeah, and I think also, too, it's, you know, Congressional had to put out a statement saying that they, you know, terminated the contract with Keith to go ahead and redesign the blue course. You know, these clubs, they want their business nice and quiet and private, and they don't want to have to see in the headlines that they're cheap.
Well, they don't want protesters showing up at the door saying you're granting your imprimatur upon, you know, they'll have PETA there before you know it. I bet PETA will be campaigning out front of his house.
They wait until the Sierra Club finds out how many trees he's taking down at Congressional. They'll be ready to chain themselves to the gates.
Yeah, well, that's a beautiful thing. The more, you know, you can grow grass or you can grow trees. So, all right, now let's switch gears. Last question of the day. We are headed towards the football playoffs. Who's going to win the Super Bowl? Who's going to lose the Super Bowl? Who's going to meet in the conference championship games? Who's your sleeper pick?
Saints. Chiefs. Saints win it all.
Who did you have preseason, by the way, out of curiosity? I would be embarrassed to tell you I had Jacksonville and San Francisco.
I, Well,
I thought Garoppolo was going to be good, okay? And Garoppolo won his last six games of the year. San Francisco looked like they'd turned it around. And, yes, I agree with you. Jacksonville was a sexy pick. Okay, so I'm going to miss that one. Badly, by a mile. It's okay. We'll try again. But I agree with you about the Saints. The Saints, for a very long time, have looked like the best team in football.
What I love about the Saints is their coach. And their coach, after Bounty Gate, has kind of gone full pirate, where Sean Payton just doesn't give a flip. And I sort of like that. And that attitude infuses throughout his entire team. It is a fearless, take no prisoners type of attitude. And it's what they have needed desperately for all these years they've wasted, these good Drew Brees years they've wasted. Let's also be honest, in addition to the attitude, they have spent resources and really made an effort on defense.
Yes, that was the big thing.
Yes. And running back. The fact that they have Kamara to go with Ingram, because it used to be, oh, yeah, the Saints. They're going to throw it 50 times at Breeze. They're going to fill everyone's fantasy lineup with points. And they're going to lose because they don't play defense. And they can't
in the end, yep, they're good. They can't close, exactly. But they've learned to close. They're winning the games against the crappy teams that they sometimes used to blow. And they're beating the good teams that used to be their nemeses. Remember, they do play in one of the most up and down divisions in football. It's a very mercurial division, the NFC South.
But it's a division that has sent teams repeatedly to the Super Bowl from the
To lose.
Well, okay.
Atlanta.
Yes, getting there. What, getting there doesn't impress you?
I'm not so sure, Zabe. It's a division. I wonder if the reason why the NFC East numbers look worse is because those teams beat each other up so badly. As opposed to I think there's more mediocrity in the NFC South. Look at how many different teams have won that division.
In the NFC South, there's one chronically sick patient, and that's Tampa. Every other division has at least one or one and a half or two chronically sick patients that make their divisions easier to win.
Well, okay, the Patriots have three chronically sick patients in their division.
The Pats have three stooges. Who, in a perfect world, would be relegated to the XFL until they get
two of them
together and come back.
Yeah, two of them would be relegated. The Dolphins might survive. They tend to tread water more at 7-9 than at 4-12.
Whatever. You're going to have the Dolphins.
So, and so you're going to go with Kansas City coming out of
here. Here's why. Because you know why? They score. They can't stop anybody, but they score. Mahomes is the real deal. And when you got the home field advantage, which they almost certainly will, because they're going to beat the Raiders to get home field advantage, it is the easiest two-step hop to the title game in sports. And I love that about the NFL. It rewards the regular season with the easiest shot you got. Two home games after a bye. So it's a very easy road. Now, the wild card is Belichick and Brady in winter, because they are clearly in the winters of their run in New England. And it's going to be interesting to see if they can mash the gas pedal when they need to.
Unless and until they improve their defense. If they do that, then they can ham an egg on offense another Super Bowl. Okay, and defense wins championships, and what has been balking New England this year, even last year, and at times the year before, is the defense was not as good as and dominant and having as many takeaways and scoring as many times. Okay, you know, I always remember and would get furious at Patriot teams that would block field goals and run them back. okay? Especially when they did it against Pittsburgh, and then we had to listen to Cheryl freaking Crow sing "Soak Up the Sun" after that. that wanted to turn me into Norman Bates in concert. You were absolutely right. You said that was going to make Steeler fans apoplectic, and it did. Okay. Or when they would intercept passes and run them back for touchdowns all the time. They just don't do that. There's not that fear on every play from what they're going to do to you. You're more able to do things to them. They're giving up more yards. They're giving up more points. They're not tackling as well. They aren't 11 or even 12 or 13 deep. That's the difference between the last 3 years worth of Patriots teams and the teams that closed the deal in the Super Bowls.
Most importantly, Jay.
Yes.
Before I hang up on you rudely, because I will hang up on you rudely. That's my move. You know that.
Well, you know, I was gonna go into the bounce music very quickly, but go ahead. What have you got for me?
Are you part of the Can Tomlin movement as a Steeler fan?
I'm a journalist, okay, first and foremost. So you know, I have to keep. I have to keep a level head about all of this, and I do write about it. Okay, but I will say this. Tomlin is too much of a cheerleader, and he's too much of a player's coach. I would absolutely love it if they'd go hire Tom Coughlin. I want a disciplinarian, and I want defense, defense, defense. Okay, the Pittsburgh Steelers are defined by ferocious, monster-eating, Godzilla-stomping defense. That's their imperator. If they had a defense, they'd have won the last three Super Bowls with the offense that they have. Okay, but instead they have Artie Burns, who belongs up in the stands swinging beers, right next to Chris Boswell.
All right, Jay. Good to talk to you.
Anyway, everybody, hey, thank you for joining us for our spectacular extravaganza, and we look forward to catching up with you as golf season progresses next year. Everybody, Steve Zabin, you can catch him one more time. Where can they read your stuff, Zabe?
Well, first of all, do you need my address for my hot sauce? It's 195. Oh, just email me. I want some of that hot sauce. You can hear
me. Go ahead.
At Zabe.com, Zabecast. Every day, Monday through Friday, and of course on the Team 980 in Washington D.C., 4 to 7 p.m. streaming live as well.
All right, I'll send some hot sauce to Evergreen Terrace. Everybody, we'll be back with the fourth and final segment of the Jay's Play Show. This is Jay Flemmer. You're listening to the Golf News Net Radio Network.
We're at the end of another great Jay's Play Show, but thank you all so much for joining in. It's no fun doing this to them, but it sure is fun doing it for all of you guys. So thanks so much. I want to thank Fish for kindly letting me use their great music as the theme song for the show. Thanks, guys. I want to thank CyberGolf and Golf News Network, cybergolf.com/writerscorner. You can read me and all the other fine writers, and thegolfnewsnet.com/radio. Take us home, DJ Q.
Tune in next time for another great Jay's Play Show on the Golf News Net Radio Network.
Thanks, guys. Catch y'all next time.
You're listening to Leaf Filter Radio, and the guru of gutter protection himself, Chris Cunahan, is here to take your most pressing leaf-related questions.
Hey, everybody, Chris here. I understand we have Ron on the line. Ron, where are you calling from?
Uh-oh. Ron, are you calling from a ladder?
Well, I was. I wanted to ask Chris what I need to do to get my gutters ready to have leaf filter installed.
Oh, Ron, you don't have to do anything. A leaf filter trusted pro will come out and clean out your gutters, realign and seal your gutters, and install leaf filter, America's number one gutter protection system.
So I didn't need to get on this ladder?
Ron, leaf filter trusted pros are in your neighborhood and ready to help. Just visit leaffilter.com/day to schedule your free gutter inspection and get up to 30% off.
Thank goodness. What was that site?
That's leaffilter.com/day for your free gutter inspection today. See representative for warranty details. Promotion is 20% off plus a 10% senior or military discount. One discount per household.